evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 16, 2019. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan wants the government of South Sudan to do something to regain trust.
We've had a hard time trusting the government also the last several years. And it's a very hard thing to overcome. Trust is one of the ingredients to overcome fragility in the relationship or in the country, but it's very hard to take those first steps.
And foreigners living in jungle estates say their lives are at risk. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Thomas Hushek, says it will take time for the international community to regain their trust in the South Sudan government because the Kiir administration still lacks transparency in managing the country's oil resources. A minister admits corruption exists and is asking the international community not to give up on South Sudan. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
Ambassador Hushek made the remarks during a public lecture on Saturday entitled Institutional Readiness to Implement a Revitalized Agreement. Hushek says the international community still finds it difficult to trust the South Sudan government.
We've had a hard time trusting the government also the last several years. And it's a very hard thing to overcome. Trust is one of the ingredients to overcome fragility in the relationship or in the country, but it's very hard to take those first steps.
Speaking at the same event, Labour Minister James Hoth-Mai noted that the international community, as well as the U.S., have lost trust in the South Sudan government because financial donations made to the country have not been used for their intended purpose over and over again.
They are really pouring a lot of money into helping us here, whether in terms of humanitarian or capacity building before, and nothing has happened. They have not seen a tangible result.
In 2012, President Salva Kiir wrote a letter to unidentified government officials asking them to return $4 billion of public funds which the officials allegedly embezzled and deposited into bank accounts outside the country. Ambassador Hushek says the government must become transparent in managing oil revenues if it wants to regain the trust of the international community.
We've spent a lot of time pressing the government, creating more transparency and better management of petroleum sector earnings. So not looking for the government to give them things from the petroleum dollars, but to demand that money, which belongs to them, the resources belong to them, that it's used properly for their own interests.
Minister Hoth says the revitalized peace agreement provides mechanisms for reforming government institutions ahead of forming the transitional government in November. He says putting in place strong institutions is key to bringing about real reforms that address corruption.
If they come to rescue us or to help us, I think it's very important, even with peace agreement. We need a very strong institution to put into practice the term of the agreement. If you don't have a strong institution, we will have a problem.
Hushek says whatever happens with the South Sudan government, the U.S. will continue to provide humanitarian assistance and fund projects to promote resilience in South Sudanese communities. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Some foreign nationals in jungle estate capital Bor say they live in fear after young people attacked foreign taxi motor drivers over the weekend. The head of the Ugandan community in Bor say at least 8 Ugandans were injured in that attack. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Juba.
24-year-old Burundian border driver Rashid Ismondi in Bor says he was chased and beaten by a gang of young men on Friday.
There is 12 persons for to beat me in the head. You see here, in the head. Yeah, I go in the police. The police he give the paper for to go in the hospital. I don't have another business because that is the business of border. They are my business.
25-year-old Ugandan Apuli Joram says a motorcycle gang attacked him last night in Bor, even though he is not in the border business.
4 motorcycle come. Those people get me. I was there seated. Come and ask, are you working the border? I try to say that no, that why you are here. You're supposed to be in Uganda. So those people started to fight with me. They beat me. After that, people come, they try to catch those people. After that, they try to take me to the police. I go to police, I make statement. From statement, they give me police form. I go to the hospital, main hospital.
Joram says he knows all the men who attacked him and will file a police report. Okweri Aziz, chairman of Ugandan community in Jonglei State, says since Friday, about 24 of foreign nationals, mainly Ugandans, Kenyans and Burundians, have been attacked in Bor.
There are more than 20, but those who have gone to hospital, there are 8. So far now who are in the hospital getting treatment. They went to police, they got from 8, then they were referred to go to the hospital. There are 8. When we try to find out what is the reason why they don't want foreigners, we have not got the reason as to why they are chasing them. And they are telling us we want to kill more than 10 dead bodies of foreigners.
Aziz says state authorities should arrest the perpetrators of the unprovoked attacks. David Machar Nyok of a group called the Jonglei State Border Associations admits members of his organization attacked foreign nationals, who he says have taken away jobs from nationals.
We were told by our elders that you are lazy, you don't go to work, you only like playing domuna and you do your nonsense. So we say, okay, instead of being abused every day, you went to the cattle camp, you take your cow from there and you sell. After selling, you go and buy your bike. After buying your bike, you try to work. His face actually is not enough for us to work with the foreigners.
Jonglei State Information Minister Atong Kwal Manyang condemned the attacks, but did not say what would be done about it.
We don't condone violence because violence is not the best way to solve every issue. There's always a peaceful way to do it. Like what was done yesterday, there was a meeting. If they had any concern, they will talk to their association, approach the government.
Police have not arrested any suspects in connection with the weekend's attacks on foreign nationals. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to South Africa, where South Africa has sent special envoys to explain the government's position on the recent wave of attacks on foreign nationals and their businesses. The country has come under criticism for failing to quickly end the attacks that left 12 people dead and hundreds displaced and property worth millions of dollars looted or destroyed. As Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, President Cyril Ramaphosa says South Africans are not xenophobic and he wants the rest of Africa to know it.
Ramaphosa says diplomats have been dispatched to several African countries, including Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Tanzania, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Zambia, with a clear mandate of repairing the country's image.
To go and explain what has happened and also to offer our apologies. And for those who have been killed, our condolences, and those who have been injured as well, we've got to do it because our standing on the continent has always been high, and this has lowered it quite considerably.
He says the team will also visit the African Union to assure the continental body of his country's commitment to the ideals of pan-Africanism and African unity.
We would not want to see that happening to our own nationals, to in other countries around the world, because South Africans have also spread themselves around the world.
After the attacks in South Africa, South African businesses and embassies in Nigeria and Zambia were attacked. Ramaphosa felt the hostility at the funeral of former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe in Harare, where the crowd booed him throughout his speech.
Your Excellency, heads of state and government,
back home, there is still no agreement on how to explain the recent attacks on foreign nationals. Teboho Mashota, a human rights lawyer, referred to the attacks as clear acts of xenophobia, which government should take full responsibility for.
What is happening currently is as a result of the incitement from our government. The utterances that they've been making, blaming all the problems of the city of Joburg, to say it's migrants basically. Because the streets are dirty, it's because of migrants. It's crime because of migrants.
But the country's Chief Justice, Mokgweng Mokgweng, insists that hunger is the cause, not xenophobia.
Why are intellectuals who are South Africans not attacking other intellectuals who come from other African countries? Why are executives in the corporate sector not attacking Africans who come from other African countries? They have what to eat. They have jobs. They have opportunities.
Last week, hundreds of foreign nationals affected by the attacks in South Africa, including Zimbabweans, Mozambicans, and Nigerians, returned to their home countries. A Zimbabwean group carried home the body of a man who was burnt to death during the attacks. Experts warn that if the South African government does not address socio-economic conditions and poor policing that allowed the attacks to happen, the violence will resurface again. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Some South Sudanese journalists participating in a panel discussion on security sector reform are urging the South Sudan government to amend laws governing the media authority that allow authorities to charge journalists for doing their jobs. A co-chair of the Strategic Defense Security Review Board says the board will consider the views of the journalists while formulating its security policy. Winnie Chirino has the story for VOA from Juba.
In a large conference room inside Juba's Palm Africa Hotel, dozens of journalists shared ideas on how to reform South Sudan's security sector at a workshop. Columnist William Sandy with the Dawn newspaper says war broke out in South Sudan because the security sector was politicized. He says when political leaders disagree, soldiers often take sides. Sandy says the security sector should be unified and well paid so that soldiers can focus on their duties.
The problem now, our soldiers are not paid. They are just given a gun. And through that gun, they use this gun to rough because they are not well paid. Furthermore, we want a security sector which is not affiliated to any political parties. They should be separated from politics.
Sandy also says military authorities should obey all laws rather than taking powers into their own hands. Reporter Doris Kadi with the Catholic Radio Network says soldiers need to be educated so that they understand their role in society.
Most of our soldiers are not educated. As such, they don't know their mandate. They enter into issues that are not theirs. Secondly, they should be downsized such that those who are really educated, they are given to do what they are supposed to do, and then those who are not educated are trained to do other kind of jobs.
Reporter Philip Wani with the UN-run Radio Miraya says the government must stop promoting soldiers pointlessly.
Oftentimes we see presidential decrees promoting officers unnecessarily. Someone is raised from, let me say, major maybe to brigadier general or to major general. That is, you know, increasing a lot of number of, you know, high-ranking officials in the country. And we are crying about salaries, but we don't know why the salaries are not enough.
Wani says several soldiers who have reached retirement age refuse to leave the army because they'll have no income once they retire. He urges the government to provide retirement benefits or create projects that can absorb retired veterans so that elderly soldiers make room for young soldiers to protect the country. Oliver Modi, head of the Union of Journalists in South Sudan, says the government should review the National Security Act and the Media Authority Act.
In the Media Authority, defamation should be defined as a civil offense. And that's what we want. Instead of defining it as a criminal offense, which they refer us to the Penal Court 2018 Act. So this, again, has also given the room to the National Security Act, take us as criminals, and they can do anything to us anytime.
Angelina Teng, co-chair of the Strategic Defense Security Review Board, says she knows there is still ongoing debate in the National Constitutional Amendment Committee on whether the National Security Service should have the powers to arrest.
Some parties are saying that the National Security should not have the power to arrest, except that power to arrest that every citizen possessed. And any arrest that requires a warrant, that should be referred to the police, because then the police can go and get the warrants from the judiciary. So that disagreement is still there, is unresolved, despite the fact that the bill has been now, I think, submitted to the Ministry of Justice for processing.
Teng says the revitalized peace deal allows the laws to be amended in two phases. She says once the board comes up with a final document on the security policy framework, a second phase of proposed laws will be announced based on the recommendations of the Strategic Defense Security Review Board. The workshop was organized by the Strategic Defense Security Review Board in partnership with the Community Empowerment Progress Organization. For VOA News, I am Muni Serino in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Trump administration praises Uganda for containing Ebola. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how many languages do you speak fluently?
I have a minimum of 5 languages. I speak my mother tongue, that is one. 2, I speak English. I speak Luganda. I speak Swahili. I speak Acholi.
I speak 5 languages. That is the Kakwa language, Lugbarati language. I speak English, and of course Kiswahili and the Lunyoro language. Those are the main languages that I speak fluently.
There are 2, English and Kinyarwanda. Because sometimes I feel like when I'm with this person, I can be able to speak with him or her fluently. And when I'm with that one, I can't be able to speak fluently.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Secretary for Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, has applauded Uganda's efforts to control the spread of Ebola in East and Central Africa. However, while the U.S. remains the primary funder of Uganda's health sector, the Secretary did not shy away from asking the East African country to find funds to independently sustain its healthcare budget. Alima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Since June, Uganda has identified and isolated 4 Ebola victims who entered the country from the Democratic Republic of Congo. The monitoring has prevented the Ebola epidemic, which has killed nearly 2,000 people in eastern Congo, from crossing the border. U.S. Secretary for Health and Human Services Alex Azar is leading a U.S. delegation to Rwanda, the DRC, and now Uganda regarding Ebola.
There is immense work that has had to be done in bolstering preparedness and response capacities, screening those crossing the border, and responding to the discovery of cases. Uganda, particularly the Ministry of Health and Minister Acheng, have risen to the occasion, providing a model for the region.
The U.S. is a major financier of Uganda's health sector, helping to combat AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, Ebola, and improve maternal and child health care. In fiscal year 2018, the U.S. provided more than $511 million in healthcare funding. Secretary Azar encouraged Uganda to be more self-sustaining.
And we have seen tremendous achievements in Uganda in terms of the building up of the public health system and healthcare infrastructure as a result of that partnership. Now, of course, over time, that needs to be more self-sustaining, and that does require that Uganda invest its own resources also in the healthcare system.
Ambassador Deborah Malak expressed confidence Uganda is capable of meeting its own healthcare needs.
But one cannot expect that the U.S. government will be the donor of choice in this area, you know, an open-ended future. So it really is about building capacity and ultimately putting ourselves out of the assistance business.
On Sunday, there were reports from Tanzania that a doctor who was studying in Uganda had died of a viral infection akin to Ebola. The Tanzanian ministry quickly came out and denied the allegations, calling them rumors. You're asked again, Waldemariam, the World Health Organization representative in Uganda, expressed concern about the situation.
This mysterious disease has to be investigated and samples have to be tested. We couldn't rule out any of the viral hemorrhagic fevers, and the investigation will continue. And we look forward of the Tanzanian government collaborating as per the international health regulations to address this issue.
Countries near Congo continue to be on high alert for any new cases of Ebola with strict adherence to control guidelines set by the WHO. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Authorities in Cameroon say at least six government troops were killed following a wave of fighting with Boko Haram terrorists on the Cameroonian border with Nigeria. The attacks followed a visit in which Cameroon's chief of defense staff declared that his military had drastically reduced Boko Haram's ability to attack. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
56-year-old trader Dimgui Issa says he escaped with three of his family members from the Cameroon village of Swarem that shares a boundary with Lake Chad to the Cameroon town of Kuseri after dozens of Boko Haram terrorists attacked their location, shooting indiscriminately.
Ils ont brûlé, ils ont tué.
He says the terrorists killed so many, torched dozens of houses and food items, stole goods, sheep and money. He says many people are fleeing because the terrorists have shown that they can strike at any moment and escape through the porous borders. Local media has reported that at least six soldiers were killed and nine wounded in the attacks on several Cameroon military border posts that started last Friday and ended in the early hours of Sunday. The attackers also left with huge amounts of ammunition and weapons. The military has confirmed there were attacks, but did not say how many troops were killed. It said, however, the attackers suffered heavy casualties. The attacks took place just after General René Claude Mecca, Cameroon's chief of defense staff, visited the Central African state's northern border with Nigeria and said his troops had drastically reduced Boko Haram's ability to regroup and organize large-scale attacks on military posts, as very few have been reported within the past 2 months. Mecca says after the fresh attacks, they have taken additional security measures to protect the population. He says troops have been redeployed.
On n'a pas d'inquiétude particulière à avoir dans ce domaine.
He says the morale of Cameroon's military fighting Boko Haram terrorists has not been dampened by the attacks, and the troops are more than ever before determined not only to consolidate the achievements, but to completely crush the fighters. He says his troops have been redeployed and the situation is under control. Mecca said the attacks on military bases show that the terror group still has access to weapons illegally circulating in the region. 27 attacks targeting travelers and villagers were also reported within the past 2 weeks. The fighters seized money and food and held six people for ransom. Their whereabouts are not known. Dauda Sedu, conflict resolution specialist at the University of N'Djamena in Chad, says insecurity is increasing in areas where Boko Haram attacks took place because many youths who joined the terrorists but fled after promises of better living conditions were not met are unemployed. He says it is imperative for states affected by Boko Haram terrorism to create job opportunities for young people.
Thousands of people, especially young men, joined Boko Haram. It is maybe time to think about how the states are going to cope with these young people.
The Boko Haram jihadist group began its bloody insurgency in northeastern Nigeria in 2009, and it spread into neighboring Niger, Chad, and Cameroon, prompting a regional military response. More than 27,000 people have been killed and 2 million others displaced, sparking a dire humanitarian crisis in the region. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Striking Zimbabwean doctors say the apparent abduction of the president of Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association will not intimidate them into submission over their demand for pay rise. For VOA News, Adi Gondo reports from Harare.
Three unidentified men snatched Peter Magombeyi late Saturday night in Harare's Budiriro Township. The Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association advised all its members and other government doctors to stay away from work in protest until he is returned. It's the latest in a string of more than 50 kidnappings since January of civil society, labor, and opposition leaders. No arrests have been made. The U.S. Embassy issued a statement today urging the government to take action for what it called human rights violations. The doctors want salary increases pegged to the U.S. dollar to cushion them from hyperinflation that is hitting the country hard and leaving residents struggling to keep up. The government initially agreed to peg doctor salaries in U.S. dollars, but it reneged amid changes in the monetary policy, which involved de-dollarizing and returning to the use of the local currency. Inflation has been reported to be between 175% and 300%. No one is sure because government has stopped releasing economic data. Economic analysts blame government's failure to implement sound macroeconomic policies. The rising prices of everything from food to electricity and gasoline has left the doctors saying they can no longer report for work due to what they call financial incapacitation. Anele Bebe, the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, discusses the disappearance of Peter Magombeyi.
He was leading an industrial inspection by our junior colleagues, the junior medical resident officers. We have been on site for more than 10 days now, and they were simply demanding a living wage.
Doctors say they can't cope.
The whole salary was being consumed by transport charges, fuel and trading. And the government has been breaking its seat, as always. And instead of focusing on the issue at hand, they decided to break the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association again in court. And after that, they gave an offer of 30% increase, which was about $1.50 in allowances. And our members took that as a slap on their face. And they said they will continue on industrial action until salaries are adjusted.
The doctors say the abduction is a direct violation of the fundamental right to move around freely without fearing for their lives. The government has denied involvement in the abduction. Police say they are investigating the abduction, but that there is a third force bent on tarnishing the state's image. Observers counter that there has been a pattern of intimidation, abduction, beatings, and torture of union leaders. Human rights lawyer Doug Coltart says the Magombeyi case is concerning because it marks a break with past abductions in which victims were released after 24 hours.
The fact that he still remains missing almost 36 hours since he was abducted is extremely concerning. The modus operandi of the abductions in the past few months has typically been that people are abducted, tortured for several hours, and then dumped somewhere in the bush and are normally found by the following morning.
That story by Adi Gondo brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Nebni Beledne by Emmanuel Kembe. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.